Leah, you're working on a project that involves looking at improving surgery efficiency, that sort of thing. Perhaps what you could do is just explain a little bit about what the project is.
The Enhanced Recovery After Surgery Project is a project that's been supported through the Strategic Clinical Networks in Alberta Health Services. It was born in 2013 with support and leadership through the Diabetes, Obesity, and Nutrition Strategic Clinical Network with nutrition at its fore. And it builds upon best surgical practice, which has been evolving, particularly in European countries, over the past 10 to 15 years through strategies called fast-track surgery. Surgery or enhanced recovery after surgery programs. The enhanced recovery after surgery program that we started here focused on colorectal surgery. So a surgery that's fairly intense with a long length of stay and increased risk for complications on behalf of the patient and the provider with costs to the system. The enhanced recovery after surgery program follows on 22 care elements that represent best care that's based on the evidence in the pre-op, intraoperative, and post-operative space. So for instance, in the pre-operative space, there are things like screening for malnutrition, making sure that your medications are optimized, heart is optimized, no fasting, carbohydrate loading, so you're pumped for the journey. In the intraoperative space, it's the right amount of fluid, the right types of anesthetics. And in the post-op space, it's feed post-op day zero, get the patients out of bed post-op day zero, use less narcotic analgesia and mobilize patients quickly. The physiologic underpinnings of enhanced recovery after surgery programs acknowledge that surgery is a major stress, and the strategies, evidence-based strategies, try to modify that stress so that you take less of a hit and you recover sooner. That means out of hospital sooner. There are three components of the enhanced recovery after surgery program. One is this evidence-based guideline for care, pre-op, intra-op, post-op. The second unique component is we need to change how teams work. So there's an implementation program. In the six hospitals that we've implemented in, the team is a leading nurse, a leading surgeon, and a leading anesthesiologist who meet and review findings and change their practice. The third component is an audit system. So you measure how compliant we are with this guideline, and the team looks at it and says, gee, we're not very compliant with giving early post-op feeding. What strategy can we adopt? And then we bring the teams together and they compare notes, and there's a little bit of competition and we change culture.
You've described all these things that you're looking at in the different areas, but why is it necessary? What was the need? What's the need that you're trying to fill there?
There's a lot of evidence about how surgery can be improved, but putting that evidence into practice and changing hard, felt, dogmatic approaches to surgery is very challenging, and the system doesn't support using data. So, for instance, it's very relevant to think it's unusual that you don't have to take a bowel preparation before colorectal surgery. Really unusual. On the other hand, when they study it, taking a bowel preparation causes dehydration. In addition, patients are starved. Would you want to undertake a marathon, dehydrated and starved, undergo that stress? No. And in fact, the evidence supports it, but changing those practices can be difficult. And it's not just the doctors and nurses. It's the clerks in the outpatient pre-admission clinic who are so used to saying, oh yeah, you have to fast after midnight and you have to take your bowel prep. So the system needs to be shifted. We've implemented ERAS using this three components, the guideline, the teams, the audit process, in over 1,800 patients in Alberta Health Services. So at the Foothills, the U, the ALEC, the MIS, the Grey Nuns, and the Peter Lougheed. We've reduced length of stay in a period of the 18 months post-implementation by 2 days. We have reduced complications by 50%, and we've reduced readmissions almost by half. So we've gone from 18% of patients needing to be readmitted after colorectal surgery in these six sites to 9% of patients needing readmission, even though we're getting them out sooner. we've saved the system in our first 600 patients anywhere low estimate 2.4 million, high estimate 4.7 million. That's in colorectal surgery only in 600 patients because we've reduced complications and reduced length of stay. So I'd ask you, or ask my surgical residents when I'm talking about ERAS, would you rather be in hospital for 8 days or 6 days? So we need to really change the culture, and it's remained unchanged for decades. We find actually that the surgeons and anesthesiologists in that operative time are following the rules, the guidelines, but the wheels fall off in the preoperative space and in the postoperative space. So we've got a grant from Alberta Innovates to study. How do we mobilize this knowledge? What are the barriers? What are the enablers? Are we impacting outcome? Because frankly, we want to influence healthcare funders. This is a good investment. If we weren't doing the research, we wouldn't know how good this investment is. At the end of the day, we want to improve quality care for Albertans in surgery. So we started small. There's about 2,500, 4,000 colorectal surgeries a year in the province. There are 100,000 surgeries overall. So this is almost a proof of concept piece of work that allows us to say, how can we change the system? Is it through informing health practitioners in the system? How do we use data? One of the other unique features of this work that we've really tried to focus on is the patient perspective. So as we seek to understand what are the barriers and enablers, because if you're going to be home 2 days sooner, you might be worried. Can your husband take care of you? What if I get sick? Or what if I'm not prepped up front? So we are also working with patients through a group in Calgary called the Patient Research Center, PACER, to follow patients through this journey and to learn how we can engage patients on this journey. It's their journey. We need to follow them and engage them. Once again, as an example, what we've identified, there's a lot of data capture. We've created patient logbooks, so the patients are actually capturing data. I was out of bed this much time. This is when I had my first drink. And they're involved in the process. They're aware. We say, this is where you should be post-op day one. No tubes, no drains. And so if you've got those tubes and drains, you have to ask your doctor, gee, why do I have tubes and drains? So we're trying to understand as well how we can really bring the patients along with us to improve their care and to be really patient-focused.
So how much more do you have to do with this?
Well, we're fairly early. So we got a grant from Alberta Innovates Health Solutions to study two types of enhanced recovery after surgery programs. There are guidelines in ERAS that exist for colorectal and guidelines that are developed for pancreatic surgery and bladder surgery, major gynecological resections. So we started in the colorectal space. As we get approval funding from AHS, we will implement this enhanced recovery after surgery strategy for pancreas resections. There's only about 200 a year, or major bladder resections, 600 a year, so still small N, implement it in major gynecology. But there are a lot of other types of surgeries where a guideline doesn't exist or the data capture doesn't exist. But what we've learned with these small proof of concept pieces of work is how we might be able to generalize that. What can we learn that we can take to all 57 surgical facilities, or with more targeted strategies to the 11 surgical facilities in Alberta Health Services that are doing more than 10,000 bigger surgery types a year?
So it looks like you're already having some pretty positive results. What will actually happen with everything that you learn along the way? Are things being adapted, guidelines adapted as you go, or do you have to wait until the end?
One of the fun things about this work is that it builds upon knowledge mobilization. Our intent isn't to create new knowledge, but to mobilize that knowledge. And with our grant from Alberta Innovates, we've created a knowledge translation framework looking at the patient, the provider, and the system. The system at your site, at the Royal Alec, or the system big EHS. Who needs to do what differently? What are the barriers? What are the enablers? What do we need to do to address those barriers and enablers? And if we do that, does it make it different? If we can learn in these small sites, can we then generalize it and tailor solutions? So, for example, we've got six teams led by really super keen, engaged nurses who practice at these different sites. And when they get together, the ideas fly. So they're tailoring the interventions. They're sharing their learnings. And as we implement at next sites, we are going to roll those learnings forward, but we're studying at the same time. What we're finding is that having engagement at the site, leadership at the site from the nursing teams working with the local clinical nurse educators or the local management teams or the residents and students that come through is really fundamental. But what's also really evident is that this vertical integration, how does the system to support this? There's a few different nuances there. So I work in nutrition services. We're a provincial commodity, as is pharmacy services. So we can create provincial strategies for advancing nutrition care through screening, early post-op feeding that are implemented through standards of practice that have far-reaching implications. They're implemented provincially. Pharmacy standard protocols for nausea, vomiting, prophylaxis. Those kind of things can be implemented. I'm also seeing that leadership provincially. Tracy Wasluck, who is head of the Strategic Clinical Network, she's got us under her wing. She's trying to remove barriers so that the front lines aren't feeling the heat of this governmental change and the uncertainty with respect to healthcare funding. Susan McKay, our senior executive VP for Nutrition and Food Service, has a big budget. You provide tens of thousands of meals every day to all these facilities in AHS. So she's taken from her pot in food service, where she's got a little extra and allocated resources. That's leadership. It's not in her pot, but it will make the system better. Those kind of senior directors leadership roles in terms of advancing this are invaluable. So I see changes that we can learn from, that we can build upon, but we need to seek more funding. I don't think it's good enough to stop here with our 2,000 colorectal patients. And in fact, I'm writing an application for a letter of intent for more funding because we've tried to build a research practice collaborative. Practice itself can exist, and our management team with Jeanette Lawrence now at the head of VERAS is doing a really good job, but you're operationalizing things, you're managing it. If you don't study it, if you don't publish about it, if you don't look at it critically, capacitate the future generation of care providers through PhD studies, resident and fellow research projects and publications that go along with that, applying for more grants through CIHR that's supporting our patient engagement work, you won't get anywhere. So this research to practice collaborative is novel. It's needed. We have a desire to make healthcare in Alberta more metric-based data, and that's what drives this, the data. Oh, I'm not very compliant. I've got high rates of urinary tract infections because I'm leaving my tubes in. Oh, look at, I'm leaving my tubes in longer than they are at the U. I'm going to take them out early, and the health practitioners see decreased urinary tract infection rates and say, ah, I'm going to keep using data to inform practice.
When you look down the road, what sort of a financial saving do you think there might be if your project is successful and these new guidelines are implemented?
Conservative estimates, applying best care practices and using audit feedback and implementation programs to support change for the patients undergoing 30 to 40,000 procedures a year with an average length of stay of 4.6 days would be on the order of $35 to $70 million a year. That's enough health savings to facilitate system transformation, not at the cost of poor care, but in fact in the setting of better care. We want less complications. We want shorter lengths of stay. We want more speedy recovery, getting our patients back on their feet, back to where they should be with surgical resolution of their disease. We can do it saving money and improving outcomes. In fact, what we can't afford is to continue the current status quo of surgical care, and we need to help effect system change. It's not that health practitioners don't want the best for their patients. We need to show them the way. We need to change how we provide health care. We need it to be informed by data and put that data in the hands of the healthcare professionals. And then success would be we go back to this vertically integrated system. Senior executive members can allocate funding appropriately so that we can affect this change and potentially reallocate dollars that are saved to areas that are less well serviced.
Thank you very much, Leah.
Okay, you're welcome.